So welcome everyone to our first day of our Holy Name Retreat. I hope you all had a good rest and you are fresh, and I will get your undivided attention here for the next 3 hours. First of all, let me see who, apart from Tara Lakshmi, was not here yesterday evening. Do we have anybody else? You were not here in the evening with the introduction?
Not yet, because we are preparing.
Okay. And anybody else who was not here in the evening yesterday? So did you get the folder with them? You have. Yeah, it's good to have it in your hands. Yes. Because we will have very systematic lessons here, and it helps very much to be attentive when you follow up on your sheets, you know, because we often are more visually inclined. We can hear and understand more when we see it also in front of us. So most quotes are in there, some key points are in there. It's actually sometimes like a working sheet. There's some dotted lines where you can fill in a few little things there. So my humble request, please, have this folder open and make some additional notes and follow up where we are. We will not be able to discuss all 5 lessons in full. We will just, from the last 2 lessons, we will take a few little things here and there like that. So, and just for Tara Lakshmi Mataji, very briefly, yesterday we were establishing the mood of a retreat, that it is not some, you know, event for socializing and catching up with people and hanging out and enjoying the nice forest or something, but that we actually want to do some internal work. We want to deepen our relationship with the Holy Name. And I purposefully keep the schedule quite tight so that we don't have too much time to talk unnecessarily and, you know. So, of course, we were talking so many more things yesterday. But also, for you, I want to repeat this session from 10:30 to 1:30 and 4 to 6. If you really want to get some transformational experience, then please be there for these sessions. And if the morning program is too much for you, all right, skip some parts of the morning program. We have 5 o'clock Mangaladi and 7:30 Darshan Adi Guru Puja, 8 o'clock or 10 to 8 Bhagavatam class. But the morning program is more optional, you know, depending on how much you want to apply yourself and dive into it. But these morning session, afternoon session, they're always systematically building up. So if you miss something, well, then something is missing there, you know. Okay. Oh, yeah, and yesterday also we gave everybody some numbers and letters for group 1, 2, 3, and A, B, C. We'll make you part of the group 1, and you're part of the group A, and everybody else has their letters and numbers, right? And before lunch, before we break for lunch, I will already give the first 2 groups, the men's group, the women's group, the tasks for the little role play, and then over the lunch break you can work something out, some five-minute skit. Should not be some long, long drama, you know. And especially on the first day, the role play is so simple. You will see. All you have to do is be your very self. You will understand this comment more when I give you the tasks. So it is. It will not require, you know, much preparation and rehearsal and all that. Okay, so the pillars of success we discussed yesterday. So let us start by briefly becoming, you know, clear about the importance of actually endeavoring to get on deeper levels of chanting. We have to make an endeavor. We often forget that, you know? We think, oh, well, we just mechanically do things. But no, we actually have to endeavor. One of my favorite verses is Satatam Kirtayantu Mam Yatantas Chadritavrata, always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination. This is really one key secret to all aspects of devotional service, that we actually have to endeavor with great determination. Nothing happens automatically just by time passing, by being 30 years Brahman initiated or something. That doesn't say anything. We have to make an endeavor. And only then we get on higher levels of experience, and only then we can get some deeper understandings about the secrets of chanting. Because this chanting, it sounds so simple. You know, Prabhupada actually almost tricked us all. You know, he said, yeah, simply chant, dance, take prasad, chant and be happy. It sounds so easy. He tricked us. You know, and then once you practice for a few years, you realize, not so easy after all. You know, we actually have to do a lot of internal work. It's all about transforming the heart, and especially this chanting. It's a whole deep science and secret, and I'm saying this not in the mood of saying that I have mastered the secrets and the science. No, I'm just practicing like everyone here, you know, and I'm getting most of the benefit here. I'm living from holy name retreat to holy name retreat, actually. Yes, yes. And I have devotees in Ukraine. They have already attended 5, 6, 7 holy name retreats. And they realize this is a must. At least once a year, you have to polish up your chanting habits. Yeah, it's a whole thing. Because as we mentioned yesterday, there's so many distractions around us. You know, we are so busy, life is so fast. Oh, that's why we really have to, at least once a year, we have to go in seclusion. We have to leave everything behind and we have to endeavor. Yes. So let us understand the importance of endeavoring, because this danger of over-familiarity is a very big one. Within any relationships where we associate every day very closely, the danger for over-familiarity is there. Anyone who is married here knows this. This marriage relationship is really prone to over-familiarity because you know each other so well and you know each other's weaknesses and you're so close all the time together. And then very easily we become over-familiar. And over-familiar means we take each other lightly and cheaply. And we lose respect, actually. Same thing is there also in any activity which we do very regularly. Like, for example, puja. A person serving as pujari every morning on the altar in the temple. Very easily you forget what you're actually doing. And it just becomes some mechanical routine business. Oh, here we go again. And you just go through the motions. And you forget what you're doing. You forget you're serving the Lord personally. You become over familiar. You take it lightly and cheaply. You lose respect. Right? Yes. And of course, chanting. You know, chanting japa, because we all do this every day for quite some time, 2, 2.5 hours. For many, many years, maybe already. Again, this over-familiarity sneaks in, like anything. And our chanting becomes a dry, mechanical duty, a chore. You know, the main purpose is, I want to get these rounds done. And the joy and happiness comes from, thank God, I've finished. You know? The joy doesn't come from the holy name, but from the fact of, I've finished my 16 rounds. You know? So this is really such a problem, actually, such a danger. And maybe we don't even realize all how often it happens that devotees, even after 20 years, even being initiated, Brahman initiated, that we stop chanting. This is such a common thing all over the world. The devotees stop chanting their rounds. You know, and this shows how much we have to endeavor to get on deeper levels. If we just chant out of dry duty mechanically, how long can we do this? How long? How many years? You know? Maybe we can do it 5 years or 10 years or maybe 15 years. But then sooner or later we come to this point where we feel, I've done this and somehow it doesn't work for me. And what else is there? Maybe some Radhakund Babaji or this thing or that thing. You know? So this is what happens. People lose taste, or not only lose taste, they don't even get any taste. Because we don't understand that we have to make some endeavor all the time. Chanting is actually hard work. We will realize this maybe in this retreat. So this is what's going on. I mean, my Guru Maharaj Nirmala Swami, he even has a special website for all his disciples who don't chant 16 rounds anymore, where they can submit their sadhanashi to him every day and report to him how many rounds they have chanted and what else they did in their sadhana there. And I'm sure he's not the only one who has so many disciples. He just makes this effort to reach out to them somehow, you know. It's such a common thing, such a common thing. Yes. So obviously we've got a problem here, right? Obviously. You know? And a similar thing is also there in kirtan. You know, if we think kirtan is just some jolly music or something where I can demonstrate my musical abilities, how long can we be eager for kirtan? You know, we can maybe be eager for 5-10 years, but then after a while we just always think we have something more important to do. And I have observed this, and I'm not saying that in a critical way, I'm just making some diagnosis here, you know, on my travels. I often see in the temple kirtans, it's just the young bhaktas jumping up and down in the kirtans. Everybody else has something more important to do. You know, sneaks off to the office, is already managing on the mobile phone, on the computer, this, that. And I was often thinking, well, aren't we saying, you know, chanting the holy name should bring about so much joy and taste? And so where is everybody in the kirtans? You know? Yes, yes. So again, how many years can we be interested in joining kirtans if we don't make an endeavor to get on deeper levels of understanding what kirtan actually is? And we will have, especially on the third day, on Friday, we will discuss all kinds of practical details around kirtan, because I know, you know, you often have some kirtan events and kirtan melas and all that. And if we don't more deeply understand the little traps, then very easily, you know, kirtan can become something else. It can just become some musical performance where we feed our egos and show off and. So yeah, Kali Yuga, all these things are entering, you know. Yeah, so, and I'm in regards to kirtan, I am convinced that many of us, especially when we are in family life, we have almost zero kirtan in our life. Because you know, if we have children in the mornings, they have to get to school, husband has to go to work, cooking, there's not much time for any program or anything. Then in the evenings, everybody's tired. You know, so many grihasthas, they only make it once a week to the temple, Sunday program. And then often during the kirtan, they're standing outside talking to their friends. They're finally happy to catch up with their friends. So again, zero kirtan. And I mean, I'm traveling in so many parts of the world, often I stay with grihasthas. Very few grihasthas have that culture at home to actually have once a day a kirtan with the family members. Very few, hardly any. Yes. So I have the suspicion that many of us have almost zero kirtan in their life. And definitely myself also, I have too little kirtan, too little. You know, because sometimes I have to admit that the standard temple kirtans are a little too passionate for me and too loud and so on, unfortunately, you know. And yeah, I'm 60, you know, so for me they're not so easy to tolerate. Yeah, and then often there's just a lack of this deeper kirtan mood. Even as a full-time traveling preacher, I definitely don't have enough kirtan in my life. Definitely. And there is quotes, I think it's in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Prabhupada says, if there is at least 1 or 2 hours kirtan every day, then management is at your fingertips. Prabhupada was saying, if there's managed problems, it's a sign of not enough kirtan. It's as simple as that. But to live that, that's a challenge, because to apply it means to actually put kirtan and the holy name as first priority. You know, it's such a simple principle which would solve so many problems. But because kirtan or the holy name is not our first priority, that's why, you know, we can only repeat these instructions, but actually to live them is a challenge, you know. But you can just imagine if in your temple everybody would really come for 1 hour every day for kirtan. I mean, this would make wonders. And everybody, not only the young folks and the temple devotees, but all the seniors, the leaders, the whole congregation, wow, it would really focus everybody's minds onto the Lord and glorifying the Lord. It would have an immense power, such a simple solution. Yet we are so far away from living them, you know? Yes, yes. And unless... You know, my approach to the whole topic is education and training. You know, I actually feel like every devotee, before they even get initiated, they have to at least attend a few holy name retreats so that we train our devotees how to actually chant. You know? Yes. So there has not been much education. I mean, the first 20 years of my devotional life, I didn't hear anything about how to chant. Nothing. Just chant 16 rounds. So, you know, for the first 20 years, my chanting was... Well, I'll talk about it later. So let us just do a first tiny little personal exercise, that you please turn to your neighbor... And you share how many minutes per day or hours per week you actually spend in kirtan. In kirtan meaning, hang on, before you share, let me finish the exercise. So kirtan meaning, there has to be at least 2 people chanting together, not just you following, singing along with a kirtan tape there while you're driving or something. Or while you're cooking in the kitchen, full blast, some kirtan and you sing along. I don't want to count that. That's additional, you know. But what I'm talking about is actually where you sit down with minimum one other person and you actually chant in kirtan, the Maha Mantra. Even Mongoladi Guru Puja prayers is not kirtan as such. It's not holy name, you know. So you just, so we become a little mindful of where we are standing here. Let us do a little bit of self-assessment. And you share with each other how many minutes per day or minutes or hours per week you actually spend in kirtan. Please share just 2 minutes with each other. Okay, Guru Premadandi. Yeah, so this little exercise maybe made us aware that we have so little kirtan in our life, right? Yes. And I mean, it's interesting. We are here, we have finished sharing now. So we are here in some yoga meditation place. Actually, it's interesting to see that, you know, some Mayavadi meditators, they usually take their meditation very seriously. When they meditate, they close their door, please don't disturb, I'm meditating, and they light the candle, and this, the Mayavadi music comes, and they're really focusing on it, right? So, but what are we doing, you know? We're walking around with our japa beads on the market, in the city, on the bus, driving the car, and we call this meditation. My God, no, I mean, seriously, you know, this, I mean, I think it's really shameful. We have the topmost kind of meditation, which brings us to Goloka Vrindavan, but yet we are taking it so lightly, so cheaply, and this is accepted as chanting. Nobody even says anything, you know? It's normal just to walk around with your beads, nish, nish, ram, ram, do this, do that. You know, and everybody thinks it's fine. Nobody says anything even. I mean, my God. Even a Mayavadi, you know, yogi there would not take their meditation that lightly and cheaply. But we do. And that's already where the problem starts. You know? I mean, our devotees should be so trained right from the beginning that these things have no place, actually. You know? That's how the Mayavadis train their people. They don't let them walk around and that's my meditation here or something. No, they don't. So how is it that we are doing this? You know? Yes. I mean, really, there has to be so much more systematic training and education that these things don't even have place. These bad habits have no chance to enter our spiritual life. That's how it should be. But at the moment, we are pretty far away from that, you know. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he said a nice thing. He said, make your chanting heart deep, not just lip deep. And that's actually the theme of this whole retreat, to actually make our chanting heart deep. We will discover this. At the moment, it's just lip deep and not much more than that, actually. Heart is not involved. We will discover that. And also Prabhupada said this nice thing. This chanting should go on. Instead of meetings, resolutions, dissolutions, revolutions, and then no solutions, there should be chanting. Yeah, in English it is especially funny because it's all these oceans, you know, resolutions, dissolutions, revolutions, and then no solutions. Instead of all that, there should be chanting. And I mean, this connects with what we just said, that so many, you know, managerial problems would be solved if we would just put more the chanting in the center as a solution. And saying this doesn't mean that we should not have meetings and so on. That's another thing that actually we ISKCON people, we meet too little, you know. Any proper organization, they meet every day, you know, yes. But we never even meet. And that's why there's always communication breakdowns and people are all in their bubble and you know. So it doesn't mean we shouldn't meet. No, we have to meet more. But also we have to chant more and put the kirtan as a center of our lives. Yeah? And I mean, we all know the wonderful pastime of Mahaprabhu in the Jarikanda forest, how he made the animals chant, the tigers, the monkeys, the elephants, the deers. Tigers and deers were even embracing and kissing each other. They were forgetting their tiger mentality, their deer mentality. So this pastime is meant to illustrate the power of kirtan, actually. That if we chant in kirtan, we are spilled souls. It actually transcends the bodily platform and the conditioning. Doesn't matter whether we are new bhakta or you know, the most senior leader. In kirtan, we are all spirit soul calling out to the Lord, connecting. It transcends all these temporary situations. That's what this pastime is meant to illustrate. And of course, these animals are nobody else but us. Yes, let's be clear on that. You know, we do have a few tigers around in our communities. Also a few elephants, definitely. Not so many deers, only very few. But plenty of monkeys, right? Yeah, so by chanting in kirtan, you know, we forget. We transcend this monkey, tiger, elephant, deer mentality, and we are simply associating in a pure transcendental way, glorifying the Lord. That's how powerful kirtan is. It really unites everybody's minds on the Lord. Very, very powerful. I mean, I was for 10 years married, my husband was temple president there in Latvia. You know, every leader knows if he leads a good kirtan that unites everybody, you know, and helps his leadership capacity, then everybody is clear in the direction and eager to follow and to serve. So anybody who is a bit in a leadership position has that experience, how kirtan is so uniting, you know, yes. So now the thing is, we are guided by habits. We are very much guided by habits from this lifetime, from previous lifetimes. You know, we are very much motivated and guided by all different habits. And of course, there's two kinds of habits in this world. There's the spiritually empowering, uplifting habits. And then there is the bad habits, which disturb our spiritual practice, right? And actually, the process of sadhana bhakti is all meant to transform our habits, actually. That's why there is so many do's and don'ts, don't do this, do that, because it is a whole process of re-establishing spiritually uplifting habits, giving up, deleting the bad habits and establishing good habits. That's what sadhana bhakti is all about. So now in the process of transforming our habits, we have four steps there. Four steps to perfection in establishing good habits. This is maybe not so easy to guess what I'm talking about here. That's why I will give you the very first lowest step level. I will tell you, just so you understand where I'm at here. So the lowest level is that we are unconsciously incompetent. That meaning that we are not even conscious of our bad habits. We are unconsciously incompetent. We don't even realize. We think what we do is normal and fine and good, and we are not even aware of how bad our chanting habits are, if we apply it to the chanting habits, you know. So the lowest level is being unconsciously incompetent, right? So now I'm sure we can logically think. So what's the next step up from being unconsciously incompetent? What's the next step up? Exactly, being consciously incompetent, that we realize, oh my God, yeah, I really have to do some work here. I have to improve, right? So what is the next step up from consciously incompetent?
Unconsciously competent.
Yes, very true. No, hang on, not unconsciously. No. Consciously competent, because consciously we have to push ourselves, we have to remind ourselves, I want to introduce this new good habit in my life, and in the beginning it will not be unconscious, but it will be conscious. We have to remind ourselves, right? So, and then perfectional level? Yes, that's the perfection level. It's so natural for us that we are not even conscious of it. It's normal, you know? And we can quickly give a very simple example which everybody can relate to. Like, I assume for probably most, if not all of us, we were at some stage eating meat, fish or eggs, or all the three of them. So we were unconsciously incompetent. We didn't realize that we shouldn't do this. We thought this is normal. Everybody else is doing it. So we were unconsciously incompetent. So then we met a devotee and we heard some preaching and we became consciously incompetent. We realized, okay, so obviously I should give this up. I have to do something about it. It's not normal. Right? So, and then we went through a stage where we had to consciously remind ourselves not to eat meat, fish and eggs. And we may have been sometimes with some non-devotee friends or family members, parents, and they say, come on, a little bit of salami on the pizza won't do you any harm, it's okay. You know, and we may even have a little bit of taste for this, some barbecue in summer in the garden or something. But then we remember, no, I want to give this up and I'm not going to eat this anymore. So we are consciously, we're becoming consciously competent. And that, you know, takes at least 40 days, we say. To establish a new habit, at least 40 days, we have to really strictly maintain it and push ourselves. And then after 40 days, we have some chance that it becomes natural. But I mean, looking at the process of sadhana bhakti, you know, even after some years, it might not be so natural for us still, you know. So, and then hopefully now, we are all unconsciously competent, at least in the regards of no meat, fish and eggs. this is not something we have to remind ourselves. It's pretty natural and normal for us, and we do it as a natural way of life, you know. So this is just to help us understand these four steps, right? So now in regards to chanting, actually this morning session is all about becoming consciously incompetent, that we actually realize how bad our chanting habits are. Because obviously that first step, no, the second step of becoming consciously incompetent is the main one in the whole transformation. Because if we don't realize, wow, I have some work to do here, I have to kick some of these bad habits out of my life, then there will be no impetus to actually endeavor and improve, right? So unless we are consciously, completely conscious of our bad chanting habits, you know, we can hear so many nice verses, what the holy name is all doing, and fantastic, and oh, so transcendental. But as long as we are stuck in so many bad habits, you know, we are stagnant. We are not really getting anywhere here, you know. Yes. So, what's happening?
It's just too strong.
Too loud. Oh, well, then turn the speaker around. Let it blast this way. Or the other option is we make it quieter. Where's our sound system, man? Hare Krishna. Is it better now or still?
Yeah, better.
Better. Yeah, I'm sorry that you had to tolerate this. Yeah, I know what it's like to sit near the speaker and getting it full in your ear. So that's why I very often just turn around the speaker and let it go in the other direction.
Okay.
Is this better or shall we turn it down still? I mean, for me it's helpful if I have the feeling it's loud, then I don't have to put so much pressure on my voice. Because naturally my voice is like my weapon here to reach you that you don't fall asleep and so on. So, is that all right? Better? Yes? Okay, good. Any problem over there? No? You're deaf. Yeah, it comes from loud kirtans, actually. They call it industrial deafness. The noise, the big wumpers, and so on, you know. Yes. Okay, so let us dedicate this morning session to this topic of becoming consciously incompetent. Right? Let me see if there's maybe one quick question before we start lesson number one. This was just the little introduction. Yes.
Devotees are sometimes going Luga in the town and they chant everywhere, like, you know, wherever they are, they're just walking and chanting. But sometimes, like, for example, isn't it said that we should chant everywhere, in every moment, in a car? Oh, of course not.
You're 10 steps ahead of us. We're just getting there now. Your question will be answered.
Okay.
Okay. So let us turn to lesson number one. Topic of lesson number one is alignment, or also attentiveness, on the level of the body, mind, and heart. And this morning we will just concentrate on attentiveness on the level of the body and mind. And we introduce the attentiveness on the level of the heart in the afternoon. And then for the next 2 full days, it will be all about this attentiveness on the level of the heart, what that actually means. So it's like, you know, you have a lettuce head or a cabbage head, and you unpack the leaves there, you know, you unfold it and unpack it. So the next 2 full days, tomorrow, the day after tomorrow, will all be about getting a deeper understanding of what it actually means to be attentive on the level of the heart. Because that's the main challenge and our main issue, that the heart is not involved when we chant, in japa as well as in kirtan. So to get a deeper understanding what that means, that's what the next 2 days will be all about. But before we get to the level of the heart, we have to start on the level of the body and mind, because if we are inattentive on the level of the body and mind, there's no talk about attentiveness on the level of the heart. And when I started doing holy name retreats, I thought, oh, maybe I need retreat number 1, number 2, number 3. But then I realized, no, this formula is just so good. We always have to go back to that beginning of inattentiveness on the level of the body and mind, because that's where we always slip back in. We will see it in a minute. So, you know, Padma Purana, and we have all heard this many times, there is no difference between the holy name and the Lord himself. As such, the holy name is as perfect as the Lord himself, in fullness, purity, and eternity. And we heard it this morning in the introductory Bhagavatam class also, how the holy name is actually surcharged with all the different potencies and shaktis. And chanting the holy name actually can give us exactly the same benefit as meeting Krishna face to face, actually. And this is quite mind-blowing, actually, if we think about it more deeply, you know? We just, we've heard it so many times, non-different, you know? But if we think about it more deeply, I mean, if we would advertise in Slovenia here in this Bhajan Kuti up in the mountains, we can meet Krishna face to face. I mean, I'm sure everybody would be here. Nobody would want to miss out, you know? Yes. So that's actually this amazing arrangement that Krishna made, you know, that he extends himself into the material world by giving us the holy name. And by chanting that holy name, we can actually get his association. I mean, this is really far out, actually. And amazing is that all the religions are agreeing on this. You know, in Christianity, hallowed be thy name, geheiligt werde dein Name, in German. Everybody has this practice on chanting on the beads. You know, the Christians have the rosaries, the Buddhists have beads, the Muslims have beads. Everybody has beads, actually. That practice of praying, chanting something on the beads, you find this in all religions. And all religions have that thing in common that everybody gives it up. It gets lost and forgotten. You know, which Christians are still chanting on the rosary? Very rarely, you know. Same with the Hindus in India. I mean, apart from ISKCON or Gaudiya Math devotees, practically nobody chants on the beads. But I often meet people in India or Bangladesh, they say, oh yeah, my grandmother, she was doing this, you know. Yes, but these days, it is getting more and more lost and forgotten. And that's exactly why Mahaprabhu appeared, to reintroduce that practice, which actually was common in every religion, you know? And he reintroduces that practice for everybody, because it was there in every religion, you see? So that is already quite an interesting fact. But now, understanding, going back to the point that Krishna and his holy name is non-different, we can actually get his association by chanting. We can meet him face to face. So, obviously, it very much depends on how we associate with the holy name, right? according to how we associate, we can either get a lot of benefit or no benefit at all, or maybe even reactions for offensive way of association, right? And we can compare it, we can give that analogy of imagining that we invite our Guru Maharaj to our home. So, and then when he comes, we turn our back to him. We are busy with some more important things. We ignore him. So, I mean, obviously, we can't even call this association because we're not associating, we're ignoring him. So, obviously, we wouldn't get much benefit from such kind of association, right? And in fact, we would get some reactions because it's offensive, disrespectful, we are not attentive, we are not in a respectful, attentive service mood, we are not receiving him properly. So same thing is there in chanting. When we actually chant, we call upon Krishna to be present. But then, because of this inattentiveness, you know, we turn our back to him, we ignore him, we are not even mindful that he's there, and we keep ourselves busy with so many more important things. So, and then, of course, we don't get much benefit at all. Not at all. In fact, we get some reactions, you know. Yes. So, and I mean, we all know that there's 10 offenses to chanting the holy name. In many temples, we recite them in the mornings after Mangalarti. And then we often also say there's also an 11th offense, which is to be inattentive while chanting. And that's, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, that's the root cause for all other offenses. So I'm the kind of person, I always like to go get to the root of things. So I don't even want to talk about the 10 offenses. I want to go to the root, where it comes from. Let's understand that first. You know? Yes. So, and again, you know, this whole seminar is all about what it actually means to be inattentive on the three levels, body, mind, and heart. And actually, Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives this also in Harinam Chintamani. He talks about laziness in sleep, right? That's obviously inattentiveness on the level of the body. Then he talks about distraction, which is obviously inattentiveness on the level of the mind. And then he calls it indifference. And that's the inattentiveness on the level of the heart, being indifferent. You know? You understand indifference? Yes. What is it in your language for everybody? You know, just, you take it lightly, so, you couldn't be bothered, you know, that attitude, indifference, not really eagerness and keen, you know, we're not keen, we're not eager, but indifferent, you know, so that's the inattentiveness on the level of the heart, because this indifference is a state of the heart. You know, so Bhaktivinoda Thakur also has these three levels of inattentiveness. So to make it, and yes, interestingly, let me add this quickly. These three levels of inattentiveness or three levels of attentiveness actually have to be there in all aspects of service, not only in chanting. Any service we do, if we want that service to transform our heart, we have to be attentive on these three levels. Even hearing, you know, if the hearing should transform our heart, we cannot be sleepy, we cannot have the mind going all over the place. We have to kick out the indifference. We have to really listen with inquisitiveness and eagerness, otherwise the words go in one ear, out the other ear, and they bypass the heart, and nothing will happen in the heart. You know? So even when we go to Bhagavatam class, it's not just a matter of having our body being present there, you know, and waiting, one comes, Mahabhishadi Govinde Namabhamana Vaishnava, or something, favorite mantra. No, there has to be some eagerness, some inquisitiveness, otherwise the hearing will not transform the heart. Even when we serve the deities, cook, whatever, these three levels of attentiveness have to be there. We cannot be lazy and sleepy, we cannot be distracted, and we should not perform our service with indifference, but with great determination. Yatanta sadvita vrata, we have to endeavor with great determination. That kind of service mood will transform the heart. So it's not only there in chanting, it's actually in all aspects of service. If we want to really get that benefit and that it brings about bhakti in the heart, we have to be attentive on these three levels. Yeah. So let us get a bit more practical. We will have a little break, usually around 12-ish or something. So let us get a little practical. Let us collect all different examples, all different versions of inattentive chanting while in japa, for the time being we stick to japa. We chant japa while doing what? And now my humble request is, please don't just shout out the answers, but lift your hand so I can call upon you. So because if everybody shouts, I cannot hear. We don't need the mic for that. You know, if everybody shouts, I cannot hear anything. And then always those who have the loudest voice, they give all the answers and so on. So let us collect all the common versions of inattentive chanting. Chanting while doing what? Yes? While driving, chanting while driving, either the car or the motorbike or the bicycle. You even see it in Mayapur. People have the bead bag and the hand in the bead bag on the bicycle. And yes, exactly. Chanting while driving. So what else? Yes.
Talking with others.
Talking with others. Very common thing. Two people meet, both have the hand in the bead bag. You know, one person asks a question, and then while the other person answers, we squeeze a few mantras in, you know? And if the answer is long, then we get quite a few mantras chanted. But if it's only a yes or no, what a shame, you know? Only one mantra. And like that, it goes back and forth, you know? We know it all, isn't it? I mean, we're all guilty of this, right? Yes. And then sometimes people wonder, my God, it takes me 2 hours just to chant one round, you know? Because every 2 minutes they're talking to somebody and just chanting mantra. And sometimes, you know, you can hardly even hear anything. I mean, I have to share one funny story. I was in Ukraine giving a lecture. And while I was speaking, I can hear this clicking noise. And I'm thinking, where is this coming from? And my translator. While I was speaking, she was clicking. Yes, and of course she did not even pronounce the mantra. No, she chanted like Hari Das Thakur on the level of the mind, you know, of course. Very advanced level, you know. My God, I was so shocked, you know. She was sitting there with a clicker. While I was talking, she was chanting, you know. Yes. Let me ask you, who of you is here in the habit of chanting on a clicker? Be honest. Well, if you got it with you, I would recommend you to do a little yagya, you know, to throw the clicker in the pond there. Swaha, get rid of it. I mean, chanting on the clicker is probably the safest way to cultivate inattentive chanting. If you can't chant on beads, it's the wrong time for chanting. Only exception is Jaipadak Maharaj. He's allowed to chant on the clicker, but nobody else. Due to his health reasons and so on, you know. But yeah, this clicker chanting with the left hand, with the right hand, with a dirty hand, it's just stainless steel, no problem. Don't even have to wash your hands. You know, I mean, this is ridiculous, you know. You don't have to finish one round. You just click here, click there, and then in the evening divide it by 108. You know, I mean, no. I mean, I have heard, I won't mention any names, but one initiating sannyasi guru is calling it demoniac chanting, actually. He says these clickers are demoniac. Yes. So, I mean, temple shops shouldn't even sell them, you know. No. Now you've got the digital ones, you know. And now, no one devotee, for many years, he didn't realize that his clicker didn't count properly, you know. And at some stage, the clicker was jumping to a few hundred or a thousand higher, you know. And so for many years, he actually didn't chant 16 rounds, you know. Yes. So these things are going on. So clicker chanting, if you cannot chant on beads, it's simply the wrong time for chanting. Then better to do something else, you know, to read something or hear something or whatever, you know. Yes. So what other forms of inattentive chanting? Cooking while chanting, yes. Well, if you're with a clicker, then it's pretty easy, you know. You can do it with the right hand, you stir the burfi, and with the left hand you click or something. Yeah, inattentive chanting. And I mean, in regards to household affairs, there's so many other ways of inattentive chanting, right? Doing anything in the household there, or in the kitchen, tidying up, bringing things from one room to another room while you chant, and all these things, you know. It's all falls into that category. What else? Yes?
Chanting during kirtan,
yes. There is this mood of maximizing our time, right? I want to be in the kirtan, but I've got these rounds still to finish. So, all right, let me sit in the back of the kirtan and I'll just mumble them off and get them done. And at the same time, I pass the boring japa time a little bit more in a pleasant way of attending the kirtan. Same thing with classes, you know, sitting in the back. Sometimes I have people sitting in the holy name retreat chanting their rounds, you know. Or attending some Bhagavatam class, sitting in the back and chanting. Same thing, you know. Behind it is this thing of maximizing our time, trying to spend the boring japa time in a more pleasant way, like that. Yes. What are other forms?
Yeah.
Doing something on computer, you know, hand in the bead bag, lucky that finger sticks out, you know, so we can still type, you know, or mobile phone, scrolling up and down, you know, or possible with a hand in the bead bag, you know, no problem, you know. Thank God Lord Chaitanya made that arrangement, you know. Yeah, so I mean, you see it all the time, especially mobile phones. The people have the mobile phone in their pocket and always getting it out, scrolling, SMS. You know, even in Mayapur and Prabhupada Samadhi, I see these things. You know, and I mean, if anybody would go up to people and tell them, they probably would get offended. I've been chanting like this for so many years, it's okay, everybody's doing it. You know, people don't even think there's anything to it. You know? Yes. What else? There's a few more. Yes?
While thinking what to do.
Yes. Chanting and planning, making plans. You know, it's the chanting becomes a plan making session. You know? Shopping list, next preaching program, or travel plans, going to India, yes, no, or who to marry, or whether to marry or not to marry, and planning our life, you know, planning anything, you know, yes. And sometimes people say, oh, every time I chant, I get all these fired ideas. So they must be coming straight from Goloka Vrindavan, you know. How else is it possible? But no, it's inattentive chanting. Let's be clear on that. You know, it's inattentive chanting. The mind goes all over the place, you know. And again, we try to maximize our time by making some important plans while we're chanting, you know. Yes. What else?
During book distribution.
Wow. Is that possible? Yeah, I guess it is, especially if you chant on a clicker. A clicker, you know, any inattentive chanting is possible. Even eating, you know, you can click with the left and stuff something with the right in your mouth or something. You know, yeah, I mean, I haven't tried book distribution and chanting. But yeah, probably it is. One hand in the beat bag, and then while you wait for the next person, you chant a few mantras or something. Yes. And what else? Yes. Lying. Half asleep. Or fully asleep. Even that, you know, saliva dripping out of the mouth. We see it all the time. I mean, this is really miserable life. You know, if we chant while falling asleep, this is miserable life. I mean, there's no question of any deeper experience or any attentiveness on the level of the heart or anything while we're falling asleep. You know, yes. But so often that happens, so often, you know, yes. What else?
I just wanted to ask.
No asking. We're not there yet. Later. There's a few more versions of inattentive chanting.
Watching TV,
yes. Oh, I mean, TV is already outdated technology, you know. So these days it's YouTube, you know. It's all kinds of things. Yeah, watching things on the screen. I mean, once a few years ago, I had one devotee in the Holy Name Retreat. He's a senior devotee, you know. He's been 28 years in Krishna consciousness. So afterwards, he was sharing with me, after this Holy Name Retreat, I'm just not going to be able to do this anymore, that I am watching a movie in the evening while I'm chanting. I'm just going to have to kick this out. I won't be able to do it anymore. He had done this for about 20 years, you know, watching even a non-devotee kami movie. But even if it's a devotional thing, it's also inattentive chanting, you know. But this is reality. This is what's going on in so many people's lives, that they watch something. Again, the mentality is this boring japa time, let me pass it in a more pleasant and entertaining way by watching something. And sometimes people make this philosophy and say, well, if I look at some YouTube thing of the last Rath Yatra and wherever not, this will bring my mind to Krishna consciousness, to Krishna. But no, this is nonsense. It's inattentive chanting. That's all it is. Right? What else?
Chanting while driving.
We said that already. That was the first one. What else?
Japa walk and we observe the nature.
Exactly. Oh, the bees and the flowers and the mountains, and oh, isn't it beautiful? Yeah. Yes. That's why I usually on Holy Name retreats, I don't encourage people so much for japa walks. At our neophyte level, we are distracted by any little thing. You know, of course, Prabhupada, he can go on japa walks because he's firmly established in this reality of my relationship with Krishna. That's his reality. You know, so if you're firmly established in that reality, then you can chant while walking and while sitting on the plane or whatever. But we are not there. We will realize this, especially tomorrow morning. Tomorrow morning, everybody bring your bead bag Tomorrow morning we will do a japa exercise, which is for many people a bit of an eye-opener, you know, yes. Yeah, so these japa walks, again, mentality is to pass the boring japa period in a more pleasant time by going for a nice walk, right? Yes. What else? Chanting while shopping, you know? Going to the market, going in the city, running around, looking in this shop, that shop, and between shops we just chant and so on, you know? Or even in Mayapur, boundary wall, people cruise up and down, you know, looking for things and stuff, you know? This is all inattentive chanting, you know? Also, even chanting in public transport. Can I borrow from one of you your bead bag? I didn't bring my bead bag with me. I want to show you something funny. So when we chant in public transport, thank you, it will become definitely more clear tomorrow after this chanting exercise. But if we chant in public, surrounded by non-devotees, very difficult to really chant with a prayerful mood, calling out to Krishna. You know, if you have to worry, what is everybody here thinking around me? And will they call the police or something and think I'm a little nuts or something? You know, yes. I once met a devotee. He was chanting up and down in an airport and they didn't let him on the plane. Yeah, they thought he would plan some suicide attack there. And he was just hyping himself up for, serious. It's not a joke. They didn't let him on the plane. They let him fly the next day. Just because he was walking up and down chanting. Yes. But they let you on the plane?
No, after flying. We were waiting on a transport. He was chanting up and down, and the police caught him.
Really? Where was that?
In Venice.
Wow, so see.
He thought he's some terrorist.
See, yeah, that's what people think. And I mean, that devotee, where he missed the flight, you know, who told me. They didn't let him on the plane. They thought he was a terrorist who was hyping himself up to blow up the plane. So hang on, no question. I want to show you one funny thing. One devotee in Ukraine, he told me this. He was sitting on the train in Ukraine and he was trying to chant and opposite him were people sitting in the compartment, you know. So and he was just trying, you know, to chant. You know, was hiding here and just very quietly mumbling something. But he had his bead bag there, you know. So, and then people would, he heard how the guys opposite him, we had a whole discussion. And then one was saying to the other, what's he doing? And then the other guy said, I don't know. I can't work it out either. And then, look at the little bag he's got there, you know. Yeah, what's this bag? Oh, something is moving inside. You know, there must be something inside this bag. You know, and then the other one was like, and then this noise, can you hear this? Pss, 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 pss. You know, it sounds like some birds twiddling, some young birds. And then the conclusion was, there must be some young birds in this bag. And they are making this twiddling noise. I mean, you know, how can you chant attentively when you have people like that around you? And I remember this once myself. I was sitting in the back in a taxi and chanting around. And then the taxi driver asked me if I had birds with me. You know? He heard that twiddling noise there, you know. Yeah, so I mean, chanting in public transport. Once we get some deeper understanding what chanting is meant to be like, it's almost impossible, you know. Very difficult, very difficult. Because you can't really chant properly. You have to be too your consciousness is too much in externals, you know, worrying what people think and what whether they wonder or not wonder and what they hear or not hear. So definitely not in the Western world. I mean, in India maybe people understand, of course, but in the Western world, yeah, people think you're nuts, you know. Yes, yeah. No, that's just the way it is. What to do, you know? So I mean, these are the most common ways of inattentive chanting. Of course, there's so many more. The list is unlimited. So now, to get to your question, you know, it seems contradictory. Shouldn't we chant 24 hours a day? But now we hear this is inattentive. So this seems to contradict each other. No, it doesn't contradict each other. Because our prescribed number of rounds, we are not meant to chant while doing anything else. And any other chanting while we drive or cook or do this or that, that's extra chanting, which should not even be counted. No need to count it. It's extra. Because if we count it, then very easily we cheat ourselves and we think, oh, actually, I already chanted so many rounds this morning while making the burfi or driving or whatever. So all this chanting which we do while we do something else, this is extra. And of course we should chant. But our prescribed number of rounds, 16 or whatever it may be, they have to be chanted with undivided attention. Nothing else should be done. And if we actually chant these 16 rounds with undivided attention, you know, then the extra chanting, even though we do it while doing something else, this will not cultivate an offensive mood, because we do have that doses of 16 good and attentive rounds in our life, right? Because sometimes people think, well, wouldn't that extra chanting while doing something else then somehow spoil our attitude to the Holy Name? No, it will not. Because we have this doses of 16 good rounds in our life. Right? Yeah, that clarifies it?
Yes, so then it's also possible to chant on clicker this extra rounds.
We said, no need to count it. Why do you want to chant on clicker? No need, no need.
It's easier for the mind to okay, here is clicker.
No need, because we're doing something anyway already with our hands.
No, for example, if we are walking in the town or something, we are not doing something, but we are just like walking, but it's extra rounds, so sometimes on the clicker it's
just a question of the mind, you know. If you have trained your mind like that, that you need the clicker in your hand. So, but you know, at the moment of death, you might not have your clicker in your hand or something, and you're still going to have to chant, you know. So, no, better, or you can sing it, then quietly sing the Maha Mantra when you walk, you know. It's just a question of training the mind. But these clickers, they just bear this danger, you know. That you look, oh yeah, I chanted so many rounds. And that you don't only use that clicker for chanting while you're doing other things, but you also use it for your attentive chanting and your 16 rounds, and then you get all mixed up. I mean, I've never even had a clicker in my life, you know. Prabhupada didn't have a clicker. Mahaprabhu didn't have a clicker. You know, so better not to allow these things to enter our life, really. You know? Yes?
Well, what about chanting on the fingers? Extra.
Yeah. Fingers. I mean, fingers, you just go around. You don't have to count with the other hand on which round you are or something. Yeah, fingers, you're not actually counting the rounds, you know? You just...
The touch is important, that's why you're also using bits, you know?
Yes, Yeah, so fingers is a good solution if you need some touch, something to do with your hands. Because, you know, there you don't count the actual rounds anyway. That's the main thing I'm objecting to, that we counting the rounds, you know? Because very easily we cheat ourselves. You know? Yes. Yeah, that's a good solution. You heard this? Translator, Mrs. Translator.
Good. Fingers chanting is for blues.
Yes, of course. Yes. Our prescribed number of rounds should be on beats with undivided attention. And when we walk in the city and we want to chant some extra and we need some touch, something to do with our hands, then we can count on our fingers. But not counting the rounds. Okay, anything else? Okay, little personal exercise. Turn to your neighbor and share your favorite way of inattentive chanting. Did you hear all that? Your favorite way of inattentive chanting. What is distracting you the most? Okay, Guru Premanandi. So I hope this little exercise made us more consciously incompetent, right? That we do a bit of self-assessment here, some diagnosis. What is it which is my main trap, which mainly distracts me from my attentiveness in chanting? And interestingly, this inattentive chanting is just the same also there in kirtan. You know? The principles are the same. Often we have all these disturbances going on in kirtan, that people answer the mobile phone and they start talking to their neighbor and they're getting some stuff out and they're looking at things and. You know, so principle is the same, that we do other things while sitting in the kirtan. You know? Yes. And it is inattentiveness in kirtan also. You know? Yes. Yeah, so I'm looking at the watch. Shall we continue a little bit more or you want to have your little break now?
Break.
Okay, good. Shall we say 15 minutes? It's exactly 12 now according to my clock. So we'll meet in 15 minutes, 12:15. Okay, good. While we are waiting, are there any further questions maybe, just to pass the time while we are waiting? Yes, Prabhu.
Krishna, I remember one more. Can you please use the microphone for the
I remember one more type of inattentive chanting that's very common. Racing the clock.
What?
Racing the clock. Trying to squeeze in. Chanting very fast to catch up to squeeze in very short time.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that's true. Even missing part of the mantra and just putting emphasis on speed, right? Yeah, yes. That is a common thing. I mean, I remember when I started Krishna consciousness, I took about 7 minutes for one round. And now I take 10 minutes. I can't do it any faster. Yeah. And I remember in the beginning, sometimes people were saying to me, oh, I think you're not pronouncing everything. And, you know, maybe something is missing there. And then, of course, immediately false ego. Oh, who are you here to tell me anything about my chanting? you know, so we don't like to hear these things, but then now it takes 10 minutes. Doesn't matter how much I try to be more swiftly or something, I can't chant faster than 10 minutes. And of course, I mean, if it's too slow, then this is also not such a good sign, because a certain intensity has to be there. We will discuss this afternoon. We are meant to cry out to Krishna. So a certain intensity has to be there. If it's too Hare Krishna, then obviously this is also not the right way to chant, you know. So if it takes 15 minutes or something, oh, well, then it's too slow. We are spacing out. But if it is too fast, then there's a good chance we miss parts of the mantra. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, good point. Okay, I think everybody's back. Just little comment about the eating. Just bear in mind that we are not burning up much energy. We are sitting most of the day here. So please don't eat too much. I mean, I really requested Ananda Prabhu to keep the menu simple, because if we load up our stomachs at lunchtime, then of course everybody will be sleepy at 4 o'clock, you know, or tomorrow morning 10:30. So in this warm climate, not moving, we actually don't need much. Well, for many, even this may be a good side effect, you know. No harm to lose 1 or 2 kilos. This may be an additional advertisement, you know. Yeah, no, I mean, really, you know, it is so warm. Body doesn't need much energy. Because I had people in previous holy name retreats who complained to me about too opulent prasadam. They were saying, this is counterproductive, and if you put a whole fancy cake in front of my nose in the evening, so who do you think I am? I'm not some paramahamsa who can control himself. So of course I will eat a big piece, and then I will be tired the next morning, you know. So, yeah, so especially in the evening, you know, only take something little just to satisfy the mind, you know, but no big meal there. Yesterday I saw all these young fellas there eating this huge plate, you know. My God, you know. So anyway, we will get to that later. Okay, so let us continue now with the tangible benefits we can directly observe in our practical life if we chant attentively. So let us be clear. What are we missing out with this inattentive chanting? You know, and hopefully once we see the list of all wonderful effects which we all miss out, that may inspire us to really do something about it. You know? So let us collect, and here on your materials you have the dotted points. You can fill in the answers there, you know, so you remember and can share it with other devotees or something. So let us collect, like we did before with the inattentive versions. What are the tangible benefits? And I want really the measurable benefits, almost measurable. Not just our going back home, back to Godhead, and pure bhakti, and they are all the lofty ones, you know, but we want the almost measurable ones where we can really see, wow, this is the effect in our daily life, in our spiritual practice, if we actually chant properly. So, oh, so many hands up. Let's start in this corner. Less tense and feeling some happiness. Well, let's qualify this a little more, because, you know, Mayavadi may also say, oh, it makes me feel less tense and more happy, you know, but attentive chanting leads to a certain, you know, a certain level of deep satisfaction, even if we face some challenges. even if things don't go the way we want them to go, even if we face some diagnosis of cancer or something, we still will be able to have a inner peace and satisfaction, and nothing will so easily throw us off balance. You know, then that's a no doubt one. That comes from good chanting. But if we are happy, you know, when everything goes according to plan, oh, well, that's not so difficult. But the real challenge is when it doesn't go according to plan, can we still be then happy? You know? So that comes from attentive chanting. Yes, good. What else? Who else had their hand up here? Yes.
Like maybe compassion. I mean, like not. But this, I don't know how to define this, but not to judge others so much.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. No, it's true. And I would broaden that a little bit, and say, put it in the category of saying, Krishna gives realizations. You know? Krishna actually gives us deep realizations. Realizations come from Krishna. They're awarded, they're revealed by Krishna, not just by studying Bhagavatam or Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vaibhava. You know, we can know so many verses and have zero realizations, because realizations are awarded by Krishna as a reciprocation of how much we apply ourselves in service. And chanting is one of the first services. So if we chant and serve with devotion and attention, then Krishna reveals himself. He gives realizations. And then we have spiritual vision. You know, then we will see people as spirit souls, and we will not judge them so easily, and but then we will have that spiritual vision which brings us to the mood of compassion. You know, that these qualities are only coming about when we have transcendental vision. And how do we have transcendental vision? Well, Krishna has to give it to us. And he gives it if we chant attentively. Very true. Not only that, we can actually learn to see Maya's workings and Krishna's workings. You know, we can see these things more clearly. That's only coming through realization. Krishna has to give that vision. And it mainly comes through chanting. Very true. We get these realizations and we gradually develop transcendental vision. You know? Yes.
Just I wanted to say some comments.
Yes.
I think that Chandramani Maharaj last time also said this, that if we chant in the morning, if we finish our rounds, then we can more easily distinguish between Maya and...
Yes, yes. It sets a whole different focus to the whole day. You know, it gives us a spiritual focus to the whole day, especially if we start the day with chanting, you know. Then we remember what's the main problem of life, not to pay the bill and pay off the mortgage for the car or the house or whatever, but to go back to Godhead. You know. So we start the whole day in a different outlook. Yeah, that comes with chanting, definitely. What else?
Time is our friend.
Huh?
Time. You can do more things in a day. Very peacefully.
Yes.
We have time.
We are more efficient.
We are more efficient because the mind is controlled. And also, we actually don't waste time. This comes indeed also from good chanting, that we value every single minute of the day. We don't want to waste time. We want to use every moment in a meaningful way in Krishna consciousness, because we realize time is ticking. We have only so much time left until we have to face death. And we want to use every moment to get ready and be prepared. So we actually will not want to waste time. You know, we value every opportunity to actually develop our relationship with Krishna. Yes.
We tend to be more present and efficient.
Yes, I mean efficiency we just kind of mentioned. Yes, yes. Yeah, that's also for, we can put it in the category of Krishna giving realizations, and we develop spiritual vision of things, of life, and then we are simply more present, you know, and see things from a spiritual point of view. What else?
Our faith increases,
very true. And that comes also because Krishna reveals himself. You know? That's why initially we just need a little bit of faith. And as we have a little bit of faith, Krishna is actually so happy that finally we turn towards him. We have the saying, if we make one step towards Krishna, he makes 10 towards us. And he does so. We will talk about it more tomorrow. We will share different stories in our life where we feel Krishna's presence and so on, you know? Yes.
We feel protected. Protection. It gives us protection.
Yeah, again, the main crunch comes when we face a challenge. You know? Do we then feel protected? When the boat is rocking, you know, do we then feel protected? Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Comes from attentive chanting. What else? There's a few more important ones. Yes, Prabhu?
So desire increased for chanting all the time.
Very true. Attentive chanting leads to more attentive chanting. We get taste. We feel inspiration to chant more because we have a taste. Very true. What else?
Eagerness to serve.
Exactly. Very true. Yes. Because when we chant attentively, and day after tomorrow we will discuss that actually when we chant we should be longing to serve. So obviously if we chant longing to serve, we will want to serve. Right? Yes. Very, very simple. We feel a genuine inspiration to serve. And again, not only serve when it goes all according to my plan, but we have a very steady and committed mood of wanting to serve in any condition, even if it's not according to my plan and my liking or whatever, or even if I'm not so successful, if the result is not so fantastic. Still, we are very committed, we have a very steady, committed mood of wanting to serve, genuinely, selflessly. That definitely comes from chanting. And interestingly, it's also in regards to serving the deities. We can say, all over the world, in ISKCON, we have this problem, that not enough pujaris. Right? Some temples even import pujaris from Nepal and India and it's not that there's not enough devotees there. No, there is enough Brahmins, but they're not inspired to serve. Why? Because the vision is mundane. We only see some wooden statue there. We cannot see that actually the Lord is there. And therefore we don't feel inspired to serve the deities. So now that vision comes about through chanting. So interestingly, you know, even that problem of not having enough pujaris, root cause is inattentive chanting, actually. Yes. If we bring people on deeper levels of chanting, they will want to serve. They will want to serve because the vision changes and we actually learn to see the Lord's presence there. But while we are not chanting attentively, we cannot see. And therefore, we will not feel inclined to serve. And then when somebody asks us, oh, can you dress the deities tomorrow? Maybe ask somebody else. And, you know, but if we had the vision, we would find an ecstasy, you know, at the request to serve, you know. Yes. And even this also includes inspiration to donate, actually, to give donations. Because this is also a problem in every ISKCON temple around the world, we can say that often the leaders feel our community is not really contributing enough financially. Why is that? Because of inattentive chanting, actually. Because if we chant attentively, then we learn to understand that actually whatever I have is not mine. It's actually Krishna's. And I'm only entitled to keep as much for myself as I need to keep body and soul together. And everything else is meant to be used in Krishna's service. If we chant attentively, we will have that vision. We will want to serve. We will want to give. You know? Yeah, so I mean, quite amazing how this attentive chanting is really the solution to everything. It is. It is. Yes. Yes. What else? What else is there? Let me see what I have on my list here. Yeah, or there's a couple more really important ones. Two more important ones. Yes?
We can slowly learn to distinguish between the when Krishna speaks to us, Paramatma, and the mind.
That's a pretty tough one. It's a pretty advanced stage, I would say. Because, yeah, so subtle, you know? So subtle to distinguish what's really Paramatma and what's just the mind telling us. And very easily we can fall into this trap of thinking, oh, it's my Paramatma told me and it's all coming from Paramatma. But maybe it's just the uncontrolled mind or something. So, yeah, I wouldn't really want to... I mean, of course, ultimately, you're completely right, but I wouldn't accept that on the list here now, you know, not to invite any misunderstandings. Yes?
How does lose our bad habits?
It makes us lose bad habits. Yeah? I would also put that into the category of Krishna revealing himself, we learn to understand difference of Maya and Krishna, and we get a taste for more chanting, you know, so at least in regards to chanting habits, we give up the bad ones. What else?
Proper understanding of Shastra, of philosophy, and put it into the life, our life.
Yeah, very true. And even before that, taste for reading Shastra comes from chanting attentively. You know, I mean, this is even a topic discussed in the GBC meetings. What are we going to do about this point that people don't read Prabhupada's books enough? Bhagavatam, for many people, too boring. That's sad reality. Yes. So why do we find Bhagavatam boring? Because of inattentive chanting. If we actually chant attentively, we have a taste to serve, we said, and reading is also serving. So we want to read, actually. We get a taste. And yes, not only read, but apply it. It all comes from chanting attentively. I mean, it's so amazing, isn't it? It really fixes so many problems. And there's one more, no doubt one, where you can't fake it for too long. That we lose attachment for sense gratification. Sense gratification becomes a boring waste of time for us. Something we can't fake for too long. Yes, comes from attentive chanting. If we chant attentively, you know, we just lose taste for any kind of sense gratification. Doesn't matter what it is. Whether it is just wasting time somewhere with some kami recreational activities or whatever, or, you know, sex life, or whatever it may be, any kind of sense gratification. We lose taste and attraction for it. It becomes a boring, stale waste of time. That's definitely a result of chanting. And we can even directly assess ourselves in all these points and reflect. Well, where am I standing here? And do I get these benefits in my life? You know, we can make a little self-assessment here, you know, but I don't want to get into that now in details or something. But yeah, these are the main wonderful benefits we get when we chant attentively. So, I mean, now it becomes so clear that this inattentive chanting is such a waste of time. You know, we're really missing out. We're really missing out on all these wonderful benefits. No question now, sorry. So actually, inattentive chanting, we can compare. Little analogy. Many of you are driving cars. I saw a whole car park out there. So inattentive chanting is like you sitting in your car and you have your foot on your accelerator. Brum, 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 sounds really serious, but the gears are in neutral or in park if it's an automatic one. You're not going anywhere, right? The noise is there, big noise, but you're not going anywhere. You can sit there in your car with closed eyes, brum, 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 for 2 hours, imagining you're going 160 kilometers down the freeway. But then you open up your eyes and see, oh, gee, I haven't gone anywhere. I'm still at the same point here, you know. So this is exactly what inattentive chanting is like. Some noise is there, some sound is there, and you can keep yourself in this illusion that you're doing the right thing and you're going somewhere, but you're not. You're completely sitting on the same spot. Yes. Actually, I dare say, this inattentive chanting, there's only one tiny little benefit in this, and that is that we have more of a chance, if we still chant inattentively, that sooner or later we end up on a holy name retreat. We end up in a situation where we hear something more deeper about the chanting. At least somehow we are still somehow trying to, you know, keep our vows, and we are hanging in there, and we are somehow still connected. Obviously, when we stop chanting, then there is less chance that we ever even would come here or to any other holy name retreat. There's so many retreats going on, Govardhan and so on, you know. That's basically the only benefit, really, you know. In regards to our relationship with Krishna and developing bhakti, zero benefit. We will discover this more tomorrow, you know. So, all right, we say, you know, chanting in Nam Aparat with offense, you know, there is some little pious benefit, you know, some little piety we might be getting, reducing sinful reactions or something. But on the level of bhakti, nothing. You know, and even clearing stage, Nambabas, all right, some kind of liberation, most likely some impersonal liberation or something. But also within bhakti, not really any tangible benefit. You know, yeah. So we have to be clear on this, and that's why there is this Bengali verse, which we often chant before we say the 10 offenses, Bahu Janma Kariyade Shavana Kirtanam, Tabu Tanabha Krishna Pade Pramadana. So meaning, one can chant the holy name for many, many lifetimes. But if it is with offense, and root cause is inattentiveness, we will not get the desired result, Krishna Prema, for many, many lifetimes. So let's be clear in this. You know, we can chant for many, many lifetimes inattentively, and we will not develop bhakti. We will not establish our relationship with Krishna. We will get more insights tomorrow and the day after on this topic, but just to make this clear. So obviously, you know, we have to kick this inattentive chanting out of our life. We have to declare war to this inattentive chanting. That's where it all starts. You know, at least we have to stop doing something else while we are chanting. As long as we maintain such habits, we cannot get anywhere, really, you know. Yes. It's like, another analogy is the hamster wheel, you know. You know this little hamster, and they like to be active, especially at night, so usually they have a wheel in their cage there, and at night we can hear all the rattling noise, the hamster is running, but he's not going anywhere, you know. So we don't want to end up in our spiritual life like that, where we're just making some noise here, but we are stagnant. We are not going anywhere. And really, I mean, this is one of the main reasons also why many devotees leave Krishna consciousness, because there's no taste coming from that kind of practice. You know? And then people often think, oh, well, I've tried it and it doesn't work for me. You know? No, it works. But we have to endeavor to get on deeper levels of understanding how to chant and not just taking it as some mechanical routine business there, you know. So now, let us have a look at some practical suggestions how to work our way out of this inattentiveness. Because this inattentiveness, we can almost call it like a swamp. You know what a swamp is? Some watery, grassy area, mossy area, and it sucks you down. It looks like firm ground, and when you step on it, boom, you go into the waste, and you might even all disappear in it completely. So this is what inattentive chanting is. It really pulls us down. It's a vicious circle because we chant inattentively, therefore no taste, therefore we don't even feel like chanting at all, and. So it's a vicious circle. So how do we work our way out of this? So the first one I will give you, because it's not so easy to guess, but then there's a few secondary aspects how to work our way out. So the main and foremost way, let us imagine we are in the situation of 16 rounds completely inattentive on the bus with a clicker while doing this, while doing that. So what to do? So obviously we will not be able to transform 16 inattentive rounds into 16 attentive rounds overnight, right? Most likely will not be possible. So what we do is, we take some amount of rounds, let's say 4 or 6 or whatever we can maintain, and we take them aside and we chant them with full attention, undivided attention, prayerful mood, just some smaller quantity of rounds. And that same quantity of rounds we chant every day with such focus. Which doesn't mean that we don't chant the other rounds. No, we do, but let them be inattentive as they have been for so many years. Right? Yes. But a small amount of rounds we chant with undivided attention. And that will give us an experience of what it actually means to chant attentively. Because one of our problems is that we don't even know the difference. We think what we do is chanting, but it's actually not. You know, we have nothing to compare. So by giving us such opportunity, we will realize the difference. And as we were saying, attentive chanting leads to more attentive chanting. We get taste, we want to chant more. We will actually get disgusted with this inattentive chanting. We will feel these rounds, just running around or just walking up and down in a quiet corner in the airport or something. This is miserable life. It's a waste of time. Oh my God. You know, terrible. So we will realize that. And we will anchor to again, you know, have the opportunity to be attentive. And very naturally, we will want to increase that pile of attentive rounds. We will want to, you know, put more and more rounds in that pile, and the inattentive rounds will naturally reduce and diminish because we will feel dissatisfied. We will realize no deep satisfaction with these rounds, you know. But we start slowly. We start with a small number of rounds, chant them every day with undivided attention, and then we can work our way in this way out of the swamp of inattentive chanting. That is a very, very effective trick, actually. That's also a very common recommendation for people who have stopped chanting, how to start again. You know, to start with one, two rounds, chant them good quality with undivided attention, and you will want to chant more eventually. And even for very newcomers, we also give that recommendation to start with a small number of rounds, chant them every day, and then gradually, as we are sure that we can maintain, we gradually increase the number. You know, so the same principle is also there in working our way out of inattentive chanting. So now there is a few more things which will help us to chant attentively. Practical things. What are they? Yes? Chanting in the morning, exactly. Before the mind gets up and gets too active, we chant early morning. Actually, we have this in all spiritual practices that the early morning hours are always the auspicious time for, you know, studying and chanting and praying and meditating. So early morning. So now, this may work for many, but it may not work for everybody. In a sense that you may not fit this in your time schedule. Let's say you're a mother of three kids and they all have to go to school and your husband has to go to work. So the morning hours will be pretty busy for you. And you will not actually get much time at all for chanting. That's facts of reality. So what's the next best recommendation? Apart from chanting early, because sometimes we come across this that people say, oh, you have to chant 16 rounds before breakfast, otherwise you're not a devotee or something. Well, it might work for some, but not for everybody, you know, because you might have some important things to do which you can't do at any other time. So what's the next best recommendation? As soon as possible.
Pleasing, serving the Guru of instruction and Krishna and women with this.
Yeah, that's all right, but I'm just meaning the practical arrangement. If we are busy in the morning, so what do we do then? So the recommendation is to be regulated, to reserve a certain time during your day when you chant and only chant and nothing else. And that is a very individual thing, depending on your daily schedule. You put some time aside and this is for chanting. This may be at 11 o'clock when the kids are gone and the kitchen is cleaned and the husband is at work or whatever. You know, so that's a very individual thing. And there is this thing I have heard, actually Śrīla Kīrti Prabhu shares it in one of his diaries, that Prabhupada told him personally that while Prabhupada was a grihastha, he chanted 4 rounds early morning, 4 before breakfast, 4 before lunch, 4 before dinner. And that worked for him. And he was even saying to Shuddha Kirti Prabhu, if you don't eat before you chant, unless you chant, you will chant. You know? If you make that rule, you will not take breakfast unless you chant your second lot of four rounds. You will not take lunch until you chant your third lot of four rounds. And you will not take dinner unless you chant your last four rounds. So you will chant because you want to eat. So even Prabhupada laughingly said that to Shuddha Kirti Prabhu. You know, so that gives us an idea of this principle, that we simply reserve a certain time of the day where we chant. It's the chanting time, right? Yeah, good solution. So what other recommendations are there to get rid of this inattentiveness in chanting?
Maybe be with somebody who has...
Huh?
Chant with somebody who's like...
Yes. Yes, having good association, chanting in the association of serious chanters. I mean, that's why Prabhupada started the morning program, the Japa time. You know, that devotees can come to any ISKCON temple of the world between 5:30 and 7 or 7:15 or whenever that may be, and chant together. And even if we cannot go to the temple, but it's recommended, of course, to go to the temple and chant there, even if it's just an hour of chanting or something, it's good to put it in, because there's this whole uplifting and spiritual atmosphere. The deities are there, Prabhupada is there. Of course, we may say, oh, at home this is also there, but still, home standard, temple standard, there is a difference, you know. So... And I mean, these days, especially in America, this is becoming a big thing, that people have these japa forums through social networks where everybody sits with their phone and chants together. You know? You don't do this here, huh?
Should we do?
I mean, to be honest, for me, it's a little high-tech and artificial. But if it helps, you know, if people live in big cities far away from the temple, if it inspires them to be regulated in their service and their chanting, then of course it's good, but much better to chant with devotees. You know, the personal association is always better than through internet, you know. Yeah, well, I mean, you know, any serious association is uplifting, you know. If you chant with somebody who is on the mobile phone there while he's chanting, then this will not be so empowering, you know. But if you chant with somebody who also understands the importance of getting on deeper levels of chanting, so then that will be helpful, you know, like-minded association, you know. Yes. So what else? What else? Yes?
Listening Prabhupada is chanting.
Sorry?
Listening Prabhupada chanting.
Listening to Prabhupada's chanting. Some devotees also have their gurus chanting. It's also can be a little personal thing for some devotees. They find it distracting hearing something else, you know, especially if it's loud or something. But if it is very quietly, then it may help us. Yes. What else?
Some devotees read before chanting so that they get
inspired. Yes, some devotees read before they chant, read something about the importance of chanting. Also a good idea. Actually, one thing is also that the Mangalarti is actually meant to be the preparation for chanting. Actually. Yes. No, Mangalarti. You know? Yes. Yes. I have really practically experienced this in Bangladesh, because Bangladesh, the grihasthas, the serious grihasthas, I mean, they're almost Mangalarti fanatics. they all have Mangalarati in their homes. Maybe not at 4:30, but at 5 or at the latest 5:30, they have Mangalarati. Yes. I've been many times on late programs which go after 12 o'clock at night, and I'm staying with some families, and I think, oh, hopefully there will be no Mangalarati. But you can be for sure, 4:30, boop, the conch goes, you know, and some granny is doing Mangalarati and singing loud, you know. Yes, yeah, it's a must. It's a must. And I'm spending quite a bit of time there with the students. We have some student preaching there. And once one student asked me, you know, he was saying, oh, you know, our life is so busy and we find it hard to chant in the morning. They live in flats together, you know, this base program, the practicing students live in flats together. So, and he asked me for advice, what to do, you know. And I made this suggestion, which I immediately bitterly regretted that I said this. You know, I said, well, the students in the West, they just wouldn't have Mangalarati, you know. They would just get up and chant. And he was just looking at me with big eyes. How can she suggest not to have Mangalarati? You know, that's the mood there. Yeah. And it made me very clear in this that Mangalarati sets the whole focus for the day. It gets people up. It gets everybody out of tamaguna. It's the preparation for good chanting. But then summer houses, there's no Mangalarati there, and you can feel the difference. There's tamaguna. People get up at 6 or 7 or whenever, and then already there's no time for chanting and. So, I mean, that's why Prabhupada was stressing so much the importance of Mangalarati. It puts a whole different focus to the day, and it's really the preparation for the chanting, you know. Yes. And Prabhupada was saying, especially also grihasthas have to have Mangalarati, you know. Yeah, so this is one part of, you know, spiritual practice which is not really established in the Western world amongst the grihasthas to have Mangalarati. Hardly anybody has Mangalarati really in the Western world from what I have experienced, you know. People don't have that. But it's such an important part of the sadhana culture, actually. You know? It's a whole culture there around sadhana. Yeah, we will get to that a bit more later. Yes. Ah, yeah, we have one more important thing that we give attention to the holy name through the ears. We are very much used to give attention to the holy, to anything through the eyes. Look at this, look at that, you know. The eyes are actually that sense which is most distracting. And it's also most superficial, that sense perception of seeing. It's very superficial and shallow. What can you see? How much can you see with your eyes? Not that much, really, you know. So the eyes are really distracting. But attention to the holy name, we are meant to give through the ears mainly, because it's a sound vibration. So that's why Prabhupada was giving the instruction, hear yourself chant sincerely. Try to hear. So that means we have to chant audibly, that we can hear ourselves. We were meant to hear the sound, you know. And we try to focus on hearing. And we may close our eyes, then we can put more attention to the hearing. Unless we fall asleep, of course. That would not be so good. You know, but we do this intuitively in kirtan and japa. We may close our eyes just to give more focus on the hearing and so on, you know. So, and our previous acharyas, they were chanting in bhajan kutiyas. In Bangladesh, we have a few bhajan kutiyas. We have Madhavendra Puri's original bhajan kutiya in Bangladesh. Quite amazing place in the jungle. There's no road even going there. You have to go in the back of a motorbike. And there's Mukunda Datta, Vasudeva Datta, Bhajan Kutir. So Bhajan Kutirs have never big windows to enjoy the nice view. No. Bhajan Kutirs are meant to block ourselves from all the external distractions. They're usually like dark, cave-like places, you know, where you can crawl in and sit there and chant. And because they're rather small, that echoes, so then you can hear the sound better. And there's no distraction. It completely blocks us from any distraction. So actually, you know, it's good to find your little corner, your little bhajan kutir, somewhere in your home or in the temple or wherever you chant. A corner, a place where you know nothing will distract us, nothing will disturb you, right? Bhaktivinoda Thakur even recommends to chant with a bucket over your head. Mini bhajan kutir, I call it. But no need to try this tomorrow morning, because I'm sure we are not even qualified for this yet, because what will happen, the bucket will go lower and lower. And we will fall asleep underneath the bucket. Also, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, with a blanket over your head. You read this or heard this anywhere? That we should chant with a blanket or a chadar over your head? Same thing. You know, at least we have to stay awake. You know, otherwise, you know, the chadar will go lower and lower, and we know what's happening underneath the chadar. So at least we have to be awake. We have to not be sleepy. But that is, again, mini bhajan kutir. It protects us from distractions, visual distractions. Right? I mean, you can try it and see, you know, but then please, if you feel sleepy, then better to get up and walk or something, you know. So, yeah, but that the principle is to really shelter ourselves from external distractions. And that helps to be more attentive, right? Yes. So we can find some corner somewhere in our home, or, of course, that's why we chant in the temple room in front of Prabhupada with the devotees. You know, this is also meant to be a bhajan kutir where nobody distracts and disturbs us, right? So very helpful. Okay, so I think these are the main practical suggestions. Is there any quick question on that, maybe? Well, then let's move on to the last thing for this morning session. Chanting the holy name requires a certain lifestyle. That's really what it is. Actually, chanting the holy name means it has to become first priority. It has to be center of our life. Then we are chanting the holy name. As soon as it's just somewhere along the side, then already our focus is somewhere else. And then most likely it's just some alphabet. It's not actually the holy name. So it requires a certain lifestyle that we are willing to mold our life in such a way that really the chanting is the most important and most dear thing to us. That's actually what's required. You know? Yeah, it's a whole lifestyle. And that's exactly where we demonstrate practically how important this chanting is, meaning how important our relationship with Krishna really is to us, right? We can hear and say so many things, but then the real crutch is in the application, and there we have to demonstrate what is really important to us, you know? Is the pizza at 9 o'clock important, or is it our chanting? And if our chanting is more important, then we will not eat pizza at 9 o'clock. because we will know next morning how to get up and be attentive. So we have to really make that decision, what is most important to us, and move the holy name in the center of our life. That's really what is required if we want to make progress. So I gave already a few lifestyle aspects here. So what lifestyle do we have to accept to make chanting the most important thing?
We go early to bed.
Exactly. Take rest early. Yes. Very true. I mean, if we stay up to 10, 11 o'clock, so that means already our focus is somewhere else. There's something else which is more important to us. Right? And if we really look at what we do in the late evening hours, it's mainly computer stuff. Right? If people wouldn't have a computer or a smartphone, they wouldn't even know what to do in the evenings. There would be nothing to do except reading, of course. But then, after half an hour, they may get tired or something after a busy day. So the main time we spend or waste in the evening hours is really on unnecessary things, just chatting away and looking up things on Facebook or whatever, So taking rest early is so important. I mean, I know quite a few serious devotees, Prabhupada disciples, that don't take rest after 8 o'clock. 7:30, 8 o'clock, they take rest. And if you take rest like that, then 3:30, you have rested enough, for sure. And you're alert the whole day. You don't need to lie down and rest. You can do so many things for the whole day. I have this fantastic lifestyle in Mayapur when I'm there for 3 months because I don't do any late evening activities. It's just 3 to 6 my courses. It's fantastic. 7:30, I'm wrapping up for going to sleep, and already 8, it's already late. Quick, let's take rest. That's the mood. And it's the best lifestyle. My God, so nice. Yes. So this taking rest early, again, we show what is most important to us, Is some other things more important to us, or is this chanting so important to us that we don't want to, sacrifice our chanting time by being tired and falling asleep and, miserable life. It has to become so dear to us that this is so important that we don't want to take rest late. I mean, I dare say, of course, I'm not here to make any hard and fast words, but after 9, at least for my humble self, if I take rest after 9, pretty difficult to be attentive and alert and fresh the whole day, and especially early in the morning and all that, Yeah. So we have, that's how we show how dear Krishna and his holy name is to us, that we mold our lifestyle in such a way that we take rest early. What else? Lifestyle. Huh? Yes, not too opulent prasadam in the evenings. I mean, I'm so bold to say a serious devotee will only take 2 full meals. They will not eat a full meal in the evenings. No. Some little snack, some fruit or some cup of milk or maybe a cup of soup, watery soup or something, but not a whole meal with grains and this is a killer. It's a killer. Yes. And even from medical point of view, these late evening meals are so bad. So bad. Because if you lie down with a full stomach, I'm coming from medical background, the acidity in the stomach is higher than in the esophagus and the food pipe. So what happens is when you lie down with a full stomach, then the half-digested food moves up the esophagus because there's no proper closing mechanism there. there's some little muscle there, but it doesn't properly close. So the half-digested food goes up the esophagus and eats up all that skin there in the esophagus because it's more acidic. That's how people get all these acidity problems and all this. You know? I mean, Ayurvedically, you should not eat grains after 4 or 5 o'clock, actually. You know? Yes, yes, only something really light. You know? And not just before we take rest. That's the recommendation. Only 2 full meals. And the evening thing is just a little snack just for the mind. Actually, to be hungry is mainly a question of the mind, actually. If you focus your mind on fasting, you're not hungry. But if you think, oh, it's 9 o'clock, breakfast time, then of course the stomach makes all noises and you're hungry. So hunger is experienced on the level of the mind. So we can train our mind and our body that we are not that hungry, you know, in the evenings. Especially if we don't eat too late the lunch or something, too early the lunch. So if you eat around 2 or 2.30, you know, that's reasonably late, so then we will not be so hungry. Of course, if we eat the lunch at 12, that's many hours, then we will be hungry, you know. But then if we eat some little fruit at 6 o'clock, then by the time we take rest at 8, that's already digested, you know. Yeah. And we sleep much better. We don't need so much sleep. You know, we can get up in a more fresh way. I mean, it has so many benefits, really, if we reduce the late eating. And not only late eating, but yeah, even just not eating more than required. Because to eat more than required also really overburdens the body like anything. This whole digestive system takes so much energy, actually. Yeah, it takes a lot of energy. So if we are more lightweight and more on the skinny side, much better. We have more energy. That's why I like to be a little skinny, you know. I'm watching my weight. It's not that I'm skinny like this always or something. If I would eat heavy in the evening, I would in no time put on 5 kilos, for sure. But I want to stay like this, then I have more energy and I can do more things and so on, you know. Yes. What else? There's a couple more lifetime things. Lifestyle things.
So sometimes devotees work so hard every day, I mean the whole day, so they lack on... They're working a lot of hours through the day, so they then for the chanting they're tired or something. They say you have to work, it's for the mission or something.
Well, so what are you suggesting? A balanced lifestyle, right? Yes, yes, not just a little bit, but balance. Yes, we can't be a workaholic and sacrifice our sadhana. You know, we have to understand our service is only really in connection with Krishna if we also chant and hear. Otherwise, it becomes mundane. And we will not be able to maintain it. So there has to be a good balance in our life, that things are balanced, morning program, evening program. Prabhupada gave the sandwich formula, you know. The upper bread is the morning program, the bottom bread is the evening program, and in the middle the nice filling. That's the service. I mean, these days most temples don't even have hardly an evening program anymore. In the early days, every temple had evening program. That was the standard, you know. But yeah, we cannot get into this whole work thing and then minimize our sadhana or even say, oh, I'm doing so much service, no need for me to chant. Even these things sometimes the mind comes up with, you know, that we think, oh, our service is more important. No, has to be balanced. And I mean, to get the balance right, that's why we need mentors who help us to get the balance right. You know?
They push us even.
Huh?
I have experienced that mentors even pushing you more.
Yes, that's the service. Okay, so a few more lifestyle things. First of all, following the four regulative principles, right? That's actually the foundation for chanting, following the four regulative principles. And just along the side, I do want to mention and remind you all that living with a partner without being married, we are actually breaking the fourth regulative principle. We sometimes tend to forget this because in the kami world, it's such a common, all right thing that man, woman live together, they're not married. But yeah, but within spiritual practice, then we are not following the principle of no illicit sex life. And well, then we cannot expect that our chanting will go anywhere, you know? Apart from the fact that our guru gets, no need to discuss now who is in this category or something. I'm not talking about anybody particularly. But, you know, in Western Europe and Slovenia is pretty West considering, you know, Ukraine or something. It is becoming a common standard, you know, that man, woman live together before they're married. No, this is unacceptable. I'm sorry. We are not following the fourth principle. Our guru gets reaction in form of health crisis and. So let's be clear about this. Let's not water things down, you know. Yes. So four regulative principles is definitely a must if we want to get anywhere without chanting, really, you know. And Mangalarti, we mentioned already how conducive this is. And also living in a community. Very helpful to develop our chanting. You know, being an active member of an active community. If we live, you know, 300 kilometers away from the next devotees or the next temple, much more difficult to actually get on deeper levels of chanting because we need association. We need that support of like-minded devotees. In a Grihastha seminar, I usually recommend live in walking distance from the temple. That's the best motto for Grihastha life. In walking distance, 10 minutes walk, not further than that. Then you have a good chance to survive, you know, in Krishna consciousness and to actually make your family life as an ashram. Ashram means holy name, Bhagavatam are the center. Then it's an ashram. But if it is somewhere aside, then your family life is not an ashram. Then it's something else. I'm sorry. Let's be clear on this. You know. And if we live in walking distance, then it's very natural to go to the temple. I mean, that's one reason why Mayapur is such an ecstatic community. In no other community it is easier to go to the morning program than in Mayapur. You just want to be there. You want to be there at Mangalarti. You know? And it, for most people, it's in walking distance or bicycle, scooter distance. You know, everybody can be there if they want. You know? Yes. Yes, but if you imagine people would live in Navadvip or Krishnanagar, well, already would not be so ecstatic. You know, everybody wants as far as possible live on the property or maybe Gornaga or something. Already Rasamrita Kunja, you have to travel back and forwards there and so on, you know. So then very naturally, you know, holy name Bhagavatam is in the center because you're right there, you can actually go, you know. Very important. And I mean, let me quickly share one thing also I realized in Bangladesh. Bangladesh is a Muslim country. Hindu population is only about 17% or something. So now, no serious Hindu would live surrounded by Muslims. No. They all live in areas where Hindus live. That's where they live. And wherever Hindus live, there is a few Hindu temples in the middle of that area. And it is Hindu tradition to go in the morning and evening to the temple. That's where Prabhupada took this principle of morning evening program. Because that's the tradition. You start the day by going to the temple, you finish the day by going to the temple. And it's still happening there amongst serious Hindus, even though they might not follow anything. You know, they don't chant, they eat fish. And they're going to the temple, it's just some symbolic thing, putting their forehead on the door and saying a few prayers, or going and putting a coin into the box or something. There's no hearing and chanting going on. But at least they still have that culture that I'm meant to start the day by going to the temple and I'm meant to finish the day by going to the temple. That is still there. So we can extract that same principle, you know, instead of saying living surrounded by Muslims, living surrounded by non-devotees, we wouldn't want that, actually. We will go somewhere where other devotees live, where we are surrounded by devotees. And wherever there's devotees, there's a center, there's a temple, you know? And by accepting that lifestyle, we can go in the mornings and in the evenings, at least to take darshan and get charanamrita and take a bit of mahaprasadam and meet a devotee or something. You know, even that will keep our life more focused than living far away and hardly ever seeing the devotees. You know, so it's interesting to see how Prabhupada extracted these principles from, you know, the culture which we still find now amongst the Hindus. You know. There's also two questions we can ask ourselves which keep, you know, give us a little bit of a feeling about our chanting habits. The first question is, at what time of the day did we chant our 16th round? Was it 11 o'clock in the morning or 11 o'clock at night? So obviously, this indicates something about our chanting. That if our chanting is important to us, we don't leave it till 11 o'clock at night. You know? No. Then we important things we do first. You know? So that question, just asking ourselves this question, what time did I chant my 16th round? That keeps, you know, you keep track a little bit of your chanting habits. It's very helpful to just look at that, you know, that we don't leave rounds till late and then, oh, something unforeseen comes and then, oh, it's 10 o'clock and I still got rounds and all this, you know. Yes, now with something which is really dear and important to us, we don't do that. And the second question is, how many rounds did we chant without interruption? You know, did we chant maybe 12 rounds in the morning and then already two more here and two more there? Or was it one round here, half a round there, and 1.5 rounds here and two more rounds there? So obviously there's more chance that we are attentive if we really chant a main chunk of our rounds in one go, without interruption, right? Of course, the mind can still wander and make plans and. It's no guarantee, but at least it shows something how seriously we take this chanting, you know? If we spread it out over the whole day in little bits and pieces, or whether at least a main part of the rounds we chant, you know, in one go without interruption. And of course also, you know, we have to really respect each other's chanting time, that we don't bring up issues in the early morning. We don't ring people, you know, at 6 o'clock with some management thing or some other issue. We have to respect each other's sadhana time and not bring up issues which can wait for later. Right? Yes. And we don't switch on our mobile phone before 9 o'clock, ideally, you know? Yes. And not already there early in the morning, doing so many things on the phone, you know. But keep the phone switched off. Actually, in fact, you know, if we want to make chanting our main and foremost thing, the motto should really be that early morning we only do what really has to be done in the early morning. Anything else can wait, and the chanting comes first. You know, so even cleaning the floor or washing the cloth, all these things, they can wait. They can wait. You know? No, in the early morning, we just get up, we take bath, go to Mongoladi or have a little Mongoladi and chant. And no need for anything else unless we absolutely have to, you know. Yes. That should really be the outlook, the planning of the day, you know, that the chanting is always first and everything else can wait. And obviously, if we still have rounds, then we don't get the harmonium out and we play a little bit. No, how can you do that? You've got rounds, you know? Yes. So, I mean, really, the chanting has to become the most important thing, you know? We should not engage in other things and reading and doing this thing and that thing, you know, while we still have rounds, you know. Yes, yes. So the rounds have to become just so dear and important to us that we feel incomplete, you know, when they are not tainted with undivided attention like that. Okay, yeah, so I think we have mainly discussed most things. So now let me give you the little homework for the role play. Group number one, who is group number one? Okay. And group number A? Okay. So we will give you attentive and inattentive chanting. One group does in japa, one group does in kirtan. Who do we give what? Shall we give the man the japa or the kirtan? Kirtan. Okay. So then the ladies group A, you demonstrate inattentive chanting in japa. We start with the inattentiveness and then you make a cut and the attentiveness comes. We want to finish with on the good note. Oh, thank God, they got the point and now they're chanting attentively. So you'd start with inattentive chanting, you finish with attentive chanting. And as I said, not difficult. All you have to do is be your very self. We discussed all the different versions, and it should not go on too long, you know, if it drags on too long. So role play skits, they get their effect from being short and to the point and having that punch and not some stretched out drama there, you know. Yes. So short and to the point. So the whole thing of inattentive chanting and attentive chanting should not be much more than 3-4 minutes, really. You know, just showing a few versions and then oh, something happens and now they're chanting properly, you know. So, and group number one, same thing in kirtan. We start with inattentive chanting in kirtan and then something happens and or doesn't have to be, you know, in one thing that something happens, but you can just say, yeah, cut, and now we do the attentive one, you know, so that we can see inattentive and attentive, you know, in kirtan, right? As we said, even in kirtan, you can do so many things, you know, looking at the ladies, or, you know, being busy with the phone there, or blah, 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 talking to each other, answering the phone, yeah, Hari Bol, yeah, we're having a great kirtan here, and you know, so I'm already giving you the role play, you know.
May I suggest, we are looking at ladies that Prabhu's dress dress the lady and they...
Let's leave that up to them. Let's leave that up to them. Yes, I mean, they can add some humorous note to that. Let's leave that up to them. Okay, so role play is clear. The ladies have inattentiveness in japa, finishing with attentiveness. The men have inattentiveness in kirtan, finishing with attentiveness. Right? So we want to see this role play at 4 o'clock, starting the afternoon session. Huh?
They're ready.
now you ponder over a bit. But also one humble suggestion, try to really perform the role play in a humble service mood. Don't try and show off and make everybody laugh. And, you know, then it becomes a little silly and stupid. And, you know, so it should be played in a humble mood of wanting to serve and help the devotees to learn the point, deepen the learning experience, and not just showing off and exaggerating things just to be funny and make everybody laugh. Yeah, so it should be played in the right mood, you know, and not just making everybody laugh and exaggerating. Okay, so now, final personal exercise. Please turn to your neighbor and share, what did this morning session give you? What are you taking out of here, of this morning session? Remember, we wanted to become consciously incompetent. So please share, what's the realization of this morning? Share with your neighbor. Okay, Guru Premanandi, Hari Hari Bo. So, Hari Bo. So, we have survived the first morning session. So, please be mindful how you spend. Please be mindful how you spend your lunch break, you know. It's only a bit more than 2 hours. So please don't waste it. Don't go on internet or anything. Don't talk unnecessarily, spacing out. If you need a little rest, then have a little rest so you're fresh at 4 o'clock. Otherwise, you know, maybe ponder over what we discussed, chant a little bit more. Definitely you should finish your rounds by 4 o'clock. No rounds after 4, please, because we will have the evening kirtan. And so use your time in a wise way. Don't waste it, you know. So then we keep a good focus. And then 3:45, we will start here already with kirtan, so you can gradually come. So, and then at 4 o'clock, hopefully everybody is here, you know, and then we'll have our role play, and then we will introduce the inattentiveness on the level of the heart. We will introduce that this evening, and also read something nice from Pope about Prabhupada and so on. So afternoon session is usually a little lighter and it's shorter and all that, you know. Okay, so thank you so much for your undivided attention. And don't eat too much. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveda Bhaktavinda ki, Guru Premanandi.